Tonight we have the pleasure of speaking about a very, very inspiring person. His name is Rav Nassen Tzvi Finkel. The truth is that his name itself is not his own, but rather his great-grandfather's. Rav Nassen Tzvi Finkel was, at least the one that we are probably more familiar with, was the Rosh Yeshiva, ultimately, of the Mir. People have heard of the Mir Yeshiva. Many, many people's sons go there. Some people go officially, some people go unofficially. But we'll talk about that soon. Rav Nassen Tzvi Finkel's great-grandfather was named Rav Nassen Tzvi Finkel. And he was none other than the Altar of Slabodka. People are familiar with the Altar of Slabodka. They just call him the Altar. People know who you're talking about. You might have seen pictures. He has like a long, sort of a stringy white beard. Anyways, the Altar of Slabodka. We know Slabodka was, in many ways, one of the, the headquarters of the Musar movement. After Rabbi Yisrael Salanter sort of, you know, gave way to the Musar movement, which didn't necessarily invent the concept of Musar, obviously not, but rather sort of focused on it. We've talked before about the situation of the 19th century of European Jewry. We've talked about how the Enlightenment came about that time. We've talked about how Hasidus came about in that time. We've talked about the yeshiva movement that came about in that time in Volozhin. But this is really the other movement, right? A lot of movements happening for one reason or another. Some people like to couch it in terms of saving Klal Yisrael, the Enlightenment, how are we going to do it? So there are different approaches. There's the emotional approach, which is Hasidus. There's the academic approach, which is Volozhin. And then you have the character approach. Not necessarily emotional, not necessarily intellectual, it could be a mix of both, but as long as you're working on yourself and trying to get better. That was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's message to the world, and one of his Talmidim, the Altar of Slabodka, takes that to the next level in the creating of that yeshiva. It's most well known, the Slabodka yeshiva, and most well known for what's called Godless Ha'adam. Godless, Gadlut, is the greatness of man. There was a contrasting yeshiva of Navardic. There was an altar of Navardic too. And he created the movement, the Musar movement, but in the other direction, Shiflas Ha'adam, the humility of a person. You have to recognize how lowly you are in order to work on yourself, as opposed to Rav Nassen Tzvi Finkel, the original Rav Nassen Tzvi Finkel, who worked on recognizing our greatness. Very interesting way to think about the shift in the world. Probably at that time, it was going through that shift historically. Shiflas Ha'adam was a way to discipline people. You're nothing, you have to be better. How could you do that? And now probably the world is more in line with a Slabodka mentality. How great you are, how unbelievable you can be, right? Focusing on what you can do, not what you haven't been doing. Right? A strengths perspective, if you will. But tonight we're talking about, that's his namesake, Rav Nassen Tzvi Finkel, the original, the Altar of Slabodka. But in many ways, Rav Nassen Tzvi Finkel continues that legacy of Godless Ha'adam by being himself someone of tremendous stature. I don't know if anyone here has ever had the opportunity to see Rav Nassen Tzvi in person, but if you ever did, you most likely did not forget it. And we'll talk about that soon. But let's first start with his unbelievable beginnings. Where did Rav Nassen Tzvi Finkel grow up? In Chicago, Illinois. Believe it or not, he's a young Chicago kid, born to Rabbi Eliyahu Meir Finkel and a woman named Sarah Rosenblum. And they were caterers. They say that they were somewhat well off, financially stable family. And they have Rav Nassen Tzvi in Chicago. And he goes to what school?
Taos?
Nope, maybe that's what you would have thought. He goes to a place called Ari Crown. It wasn't called that back then, but nowadays it's called that. I forgot what the original name was, something day school, Hebrew day school, something like that. A modern Orthodox school still exists today. My mother-in-law teaches in the kindergarten of Ari Crown. If you go to the building, you can see in the hallways different gedolim, including Rav Nassen Tzvi Finkel, as an alumnus of that school. And he goes to this co-ed modern Orthodox school, and his parents ultimately bring him on a trip to Eretz Yisrael when he's 14 years old. Now, at the time, his great uncle, Reb Lazer Yudel Finkel, who had also married into another Chashev family in Eretz Yisrael, had become the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir. The Mir was a Lithuanian yeshiva that came over from Europe. Crazy stories about it going, moving this way and that way during the war to Japan. Exactly the whole story. Unbelievable story. You can look into it on your own. You can really gain a lot of inspiration from that too. But when he comes to Eretz Yisrael, let's say in the year 1957, so he comes and he stops by Reb Lazer Yudel, his great uncle. And Reb Lazer Yudel saw something in the inner of Nassim Tzvi and said, "Why don't you stay here a little bit?" And he said, "Okay." So he stayed there for 8 months. And after 8 months, family wanted to come back. And he told his great uncle, and this might have been against his family's wishes, but he said to him, "I'll be back after high school." At the time, he was a sophomore in high school. So he goes back. Where does he go to high school? Eiderkraun. There's a Crown family, a lot of Jewish money in Chicago. So he goes to Eiderkraun, which still exists today, and a modern Orthodox co-educational school. He went to a school with both boys and girls. And this is a picture of him from one of the yearbooks. Strapping young man. I don't know if people can see this on the video here. This is Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel. Believe it or not. That's Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel. It says under his, as his bio, his ambition is undecided. He was the president of the student council. He was a salesman at the co-op store. He was in the senior club. He was on the academocrat staff. Homeroom treasurer in 10th grade. He was on the baseball team in 9th grade. He was a center fielder, they say. And he was a homeroom chairman, as a senior. So he was on student council, and he was a baseball player for the high school baseball team. This is Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel. We don't usually talk about baseball players in this class, but today we have the opportunity to do so. And what's interesting about that, just obviously he makes a bit of a shift in his life as he goes back to the Mir, but to take note of the importance of that moment in his life, bless you, Reina, to take note of that, the importance of this moment in his life, he was learning in English in a Jewish day school. So what does that do for a person who ultimately becomes a Rosh Yeshiva? He knows English, and he knows where guys are coming from, right? He knows America very well, right? It's not like he grew up in Brooklyn and went to a Haredi school. He knows what it means to be an American boy living on the streets of Chicago and playing baseball, right? That's an important thing for Rosh Yeshiva to know. You know, I remember when I was going into Rabbanus, and one of my rabbinic mentors told me, "Don't forget about baseball. Right? Don't forget about the Yankees. Because you never know what high school kid's going to need you to know about the Yankees and to know about what it means to play ball." Right? There's something to that. And I remember my great uncle, Rav Gedalia Einemer, was a formidable Rav in Silver Spring, Maryland for over 50 years. And he always kept track of the Redskins. Now they're called whatever, the Washington football team. That's their actual name. But he kept tabs on the football team because the boys knew about football, so they were familiar. Anyways, and it just so happens to be that the other Rosh Yeshiva and the current Rosh Yeshiva of that same yeshiva in Silver Spring, the Yeshiva of Greater Washington, is actually a son-in-law of Nassim Tzvi Finkel. Son-in-law? Or brother-in-law? Son? There's a connection. He married into the family.
My aunt lived in Silver Spring.
Okay. He probably knew of my uncle. Either way, at the age of 17, perhaps against his parents' wishes, he goes back to the Mir. And he learns with great hasmada, as they call it, with great consistency. He's there all the time, an unending commitment to learning Torah. And this is really, really what you have to do in order to sort of grow into the prominence that he did. And they say that he learned every day until 2 o'clock in the morning. And at the time, he was only one of 200 students that were in the yeshiva. 200 students. Imagine the Mir yeshiva only having 200 students. And I don't know if anyone's ever seen the Mir. Huge, towering buildings. 5, 6 of them, something like that. They have multiple campuses. They have another yeshiva in Ramat Shlomo. They have another yeshiva in Modi'in Elite. Huge, huge operation. Nowadays, it competes with the Lakewood as being the largest yeshiva in the world, which is no small operation. But at the time, only 200 students. And they say that he and his chavrusas, he had a couple notable chavrusas, he and his chavrusas finished Shas, finished all of Gemara every single year. Every year they would finish Shas. Now, what does that mean, to finish Shas in 1 year? So you've heard of the Daf Yomi cycle. Daf Yomi cycle takes 7.5 years. And that's doing a page a day, which itself is really 2 pages in American speak, because you do the front side and the back side. That means that he was learning and studying at least 7.5 pages a day, right, in order to get to the same number, right, which is really 15 pages a day in American, right, and you have all the commentaries. That's an impressive feat, 15 pages a day. And without, obviously, without, you know, taking days off. Otherwise, you'd have to do 30 pages the next day, right? So very, very astute from an early... He's still a teenager. Ultimately, he marries Reb Lazer Yudel's granddaughter, Leah. That makes him marrying his second cousin, right? Ultimately, because Reb Lazer was his great-uncle. And at the age of 23, only a couple years later, I don't know how old he was, but Reb Lazer Yudel passed away in 1965, and it was at that point where Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel took on an actual leadership role in the yeshiva, not in the leadership in terms of administration yet, but he started giving shir in the yeshiva. He's 23 years old. 23 years old. Nowadays, people don't get smicha until they're 25, and he had already gotten a position of giving shir at the Mir Yeshiva when he was 23. And obviously the yeshiva is growing. It was 200 students 7 years before that, 6 years before that. Now it's growing, and he's giving shir at one of the bigger, up-and-coming yeshivas in the world. And he gives shir for a while. Gives shir for 20 years there. And ultimately his father-in-law, Rav Banish Finkel, who was at that point the Rosh Yeshiva for the last 20 years, passes away. That's in year 1990, thereabouts. And so Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel takes over the yeshiva. And at this point, this is 23, 24 years. It's almost 30 years since he got there as a teenager. So he's been there. He's sort of worked his way up. You know, he's become one of the main Rebbeim. And he becomes the Rosh Yeshiva at 46 years old. 46 years old, to be the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir. How big was the Mir at that time? 1,200 students. He was the Rosh Yeshiva at 46 years old of 1,200 students. A pretty unbelievable position that he had. And at 1,200 students, you would think that they had grown to capacity. Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel took it upon himself to continue growing. A couple interesting things about Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel at this point. Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel used to say that if it was a difficult yeshiva to get into, he would have never made it in. Because who was he? He was this modern Orthodox, 17-year-old, went to school with girls, came straight from America, didn't have any other prior yeshiva education, at least more serious yeshiva education. He said if it was a strict yeshiva that didn't open its doors to people who wanted to learn, he would have never gotten in. And therefore, Reb Nosson Zvi makes it his own mission to allow anybody who wants to learn into the Mir Yeshiva. Now, there's still a process of getting into the yeshiva. You still have to take tests, and you still have to speak to Reb Nosson Zvi, but that was his policy. And it's very interesting to note that that ultimately, the Mir Yeshiva becomes a place for not only Lithuanian Jews. Now, the Mir Yeshiva had become sort of one of the mainstays of the Lithuanian dynasty, right? We talk about the Volozhiner Yeshiva. Now the truth is that the brisk, right, the Velashi Yeshiva, which morphs into sort of the brisk or lamdas, goes in its other, in a different direction, but within the same branch of learning Torah in an academic style. And Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel had basically taken over the Mir Yeshiva with a different, not necessarily with a different approach to learning, but with a different mentality as to who's going to come into Yeshiva. As opposed to maybe the historical, traditional, sort of Lithuanian Talmud, who always learned Gemara in the same way, you know, with looking at all the different shitas of the Rishonim. First of all, the yeshiva is so big, 1,200 students, you can't really control what everyone's learning. But secondly, Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel took it upon himself to include whoever wanted to come. And they had Sephardic Jews who have a different way of learning, and he actually brought in a whole group of Hasidic Jews. They're Hasidim in the Mir, right? It's, I don't know if people are familiar with that. But that would be crazy to someone who's familiar with what the Mir was. The Hasidim should be in the Mir. They're completely different styles. But he nonetheless opened the door to them also with the same mentality. If he was somebody who, if the yeshiva was a place which was a stickler for who got to get in, who got to be admitted, so then he would have never been there himself. That's what he said. I don't know if it's true or not. And then around the time that he takes over as Rosh Yeshiva, he is diagnosed with Parkinson's. Parkinson's disease, as people are familiar, is a sort of debilitating physically. It doesn't necessarily affect you intellectually, but physically, you have less control over your bodies and your body and your limbs. And if anyone ever saw, this is why I said before, if anyone ever saw Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, you wouldn't forget it. Because Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel was always shaking. His body was always moving. You can see videos online. It's not something that you can't see anymore. Because it's in the 90s already. And they say, and I mean, this is well known, that in order to treat the Parkinson's, or at least to lessen the symptoms of Parkinson's, you can take certain medications. I don't exactly know what they do, so don't ask me. But the point is that Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel refused to take the medication. Not because he was against science, but because he said to himself that if I were to take the medication, they say that some of the side effects of the medication is that you stop being able to think clearly. You have a little foggy focus. You can't really concentrate. And he said, I would rather be able to learn with this, with all the side effects, with all the symptoms of Parkinson's, rather than not being able to learn without Parkinson's. And we'll see soon a Devar Torah he gave on Lech Lecha that's related to that. And if anyone ever saw Rav Nosson Tzvi, you know, he didn't, despite the fact that he didn't take this medication, he never succumbed to the illness either, right? He lived a vivacious life. He was still giving shirim until late into his life. He passed away in 2011. His 10th yahrzeit this coming week, and he was giving shiurim not every day, but every day of the week he had something. He gave one big shiur to the whole yeshiva once a week. He would give vad, which is like sort of like a little chevra gets together, either in his house or in someone else's house, and he would give over like a little idea, a Dvar Torah of some kind. They would sing maybe. Not exactly sure what the vadim of the Mir Yeshiva looked like, but that's what they say. And on Fridays he would give this shiur at his house. And these are some you can find online. He had this, you know, innocent little apartment. I think it was an apartment, first floor apartment, from what I recall. And people would pack in there to hear him speak. And he didn't speak for very long, because obviously with Parkinson's it got, you know, gradually worse and worse and more difficult to speak. But he always he was always very adamant in giving shiur and never stopped learning. And he would always give, I think it was a parsha shiur on Friday mornings. And people would sort of flock to the apartment to hear it. They'd have a whole microphone set up and whatever. The story goes that generally, Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel was very committed to the yeshiva. And despite his condition, he actually would always travel to England, and I think also to America, a couple times a year on fundraising trips. Wow. to try to raise money for the yeshiva. It was under his watch that they built all those buildings that you know of as the Mir. It used to only be one building. When he got there, it was one small building. He built these big, huge buildings. I don't know if they're dorms. I'm sure there's some of them are dorms and some of them are cafeterias. But there's always a big base medrash on the first floor you could always see. And I've been to a couple of them, but not in a consistent long-term way. But you go to Meir Sharm, they're all over there. I think they're all in Meir Sharm, except for the ones that are in Modi'in Elit and are in Ramat Shlomo and whatever. And either way, he was always fundraising, and he was always willing to meet with anybody. And this is why I personally got to meet with him. You know, it wasn't a very long meeting. That was probably a year before he died, maybe in summer of 2010, probably something like that. And he passed away the next year, but a year and a half later. And I don't remember anything he said, but you don't get, you know, the inspiration from what he says. You get the inspiration from the fact that he's clearly, you know, dealing with such a condition, and nonetheless is fighting to get every word out. And he's so determined that he does everything he can to teach and to continue learning. It's a truly, truly inspiring sight to see him. And I advise people to watch online. They have videos of him trying to speak. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. One story goes that Howard Schultz, people know who Howard Schultz is. I don't know if he still is, but he was the founder and CEO of Starbucks, the coffee company in Seattle. And one time, I don't know why, they took a trip to Eretz Yisrael. Howard Schultz tells the story. And I've heard the story a few different times. And Howard Schultz somehow got a meeting with Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel. I don't know how it happens. But I don't know why, and obviously Howard Schultz was Jewish, and maybe there was some kind of connection there. So either way, they come into Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel's house, and they're all sitting around the table, and Rav Nosson Zvi is a busy guy. He's not just busy, he's also, you know, takes him a while to do different things. So they're waiting for Rav Nosson Zvi, and they come up to the table, he comes up to the table, they're all sitting there, and all of a sudden they get very, you know, nervous on his behalf because of his Parkinson's. Right, he's shaking and they get a little uncomfortable. I don't know if he was in a wheelchair at this point or not, but the story goes is that they were very uncomfortable. They couldn't look at him. And he claps on the table. Everybody look at me. Like, stop being such, so afraid of me. And he says to these, I don't know, the administrators of the Starbucks, he says to them, I don't have much time, and I'm sure you are all very busy, but I wanted to ask you one question. What is the lesson that we're supposed to learn from the Holocaust? That's what he asked the CEO and all the good people from Starbucks. So somebody said, the lesson is we have to never forget. And he said, okay, that's nice, but no, that's not the lesson. Another person says, you can't be a bystander. So that's a good answer, but there's a better lesson. So Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel went into this sort of description, and he said, and this is how Howard Schultz sells it, so I don't know how exactly it happened, but Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel talked about how the families would be rounded up onto these trains, and people would die from asphyxiation, and they would be trembling from the cold, and they'd be in the dark, and they'd have to obviously go to the bathroom on these trains, and it was absolutely terrible situation, as we all know. They get off the trains, and it's even more abuse, and we all know the processes of stripping them down, and of cutting the hair, and maybe getting numbers, and of being separated from their families and their children, and everybody's screaming. And then the nighttime comes, and everybody's cramped into these barracks, and the Nazis came in and gave them one blanket for every six people. One blanket for every six people. You can imagine the difficulty all those people were going through when they came to those barracks just trying to get some sleep. And now they had to decide, are they going to keep the blanket for themselves, or are they going to put the blanket over the other five people who didn't get one? And Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel says the lesson of the Holocaust is to understand the human spirit, that no matter what's happening, you should always be able to reach out your blanket to cover somebody else. You should always be able to share your blanket. And so he says to the Starbucks administration, don't ever forget, as big as you get and as difficult as the world might seem, it's your responsibility to share your blanket. That was his lesson to the Starbucks administration. And that's what Howard Schultz talks about. I don't know what the context of him talking about it was, but that was the Starbucks administration's meeting with Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel. He made that kind of impression on people. that Howard Schultz would write about it later in life. As I said before, people used to come to his house all the time to hear a shir. He used to go to the yeshiva and other places to give the vod and to give the shir. Ultimately, he just stayed in his house and people came to him. But obviously, as we said before, he would still not take any medications. Ultimately, at the age of 68, he died of a cardiac arrest on the 11th of Cheshvan. I think tonight is the 4th of Cheshvan. The 11th of Cheshvan, a week from today. Exactly 10 years ago. It's always hard to estimate how many people go to a funeral, but legend has it that it was 100,000 people that were at his funeral, especially in Mea Sharm. The people are packed. You know, you can't get a good look at the whole crowd. And by the time that he passed 10 years ago, does anyone want to guess how many students were in the Meir Yeshiva? He started in 1990 with 1,200. By the time he passed in 2011, only 21 years later, the yeshiva had grown to over 6,000 talmidim. Wow. 6,000 students. Legend has it that now it's closer to 9,000. It keeps growing and growing in the model of Rav Nosson Tzvi, that anybody who wants to learn should be able to come and learn. Now, it's a little bit of a tricky thing to gauge the numbers of the yeshiva, too, because some people are officially enrolled in the yeshiva, and some people aren't. And even though some people aren't, at least historically, the Mir has always been very giving of the resources, to the extent that they don't check anybody for, you know, if they need a good lunch, if they need a hot meal, the cafeteria is willing to give them. At least that's the legend. I think nowadays, at least as of a couple of years ago, they have 9 buildings in total of the Mir Yeshiva. He used to give incentives. I don't know if this is something that he had when he was growing up, but he used to give incentives for students that learned well. I heard from Rav Herschel Schachter, that he always wanted to learn to talk in learning with Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel. Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel was never interested in learning with Rav Schachter, like of YU. He always wanted to hear about his family. That's the type of person Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel was. The kind of person that even though there were 6,000 students, he wanted to know each one of them. That's how he at least tried to have a connection with all of them, to hear about their simchas, to hear about their families, to hear about their growth. Despite the fact that he was, you know, so invested in Talmud Torah, he was invested in the students holistically. As I said before, the only competition that the Mir has in terms of quantity is Lakewood, and Lakewood also has been split up into a bunch of different places. But obviously, the Beis Medrash Gavoa BMG is the main yeshiva there. People might be familiar with that. People might have children there. Either way, he did everything he could to increase the Talmud Torah of all of Klal Yisrael. And he didn't have any patience for politics. They say that he rarely took any public position on any specific issues. Even if it was a frum thing, right? Even if it was a stark thing, he didn't want to take any position. I don't know exactly why. And apparently the only kol kore, the only opposition he ever took in a sort of, in an activism way, was the activism against cell phones in the Beis Medrash. He was not a fan. Obviously, in 2011, that was like a new type of thing, to have a cell phone that you could walk around with. It's probably 5 years old, basically, on the market, 5 to 10 years old. So he was against that, at least originally. And that was only because it took away from people's Talmud Torah. That was his whole life, to increase people's learning, and that was what he created in the Mir Yeshiva. So from humble beginnings, Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, young boy in Chicago, Illinois, goes to Ari Crown, goes to Ida Crown, was a center fielder and the president of student council, ultimately becomes, and not just becomes, but creates the largest yeshiva of the world. The largest yeshiva in the world. Humble beginnings, maybe not so humble beginnings, depends how you consider Chicago. But the point is that he didn't grow up as a Haredi in Mea Sharim, but he ended up being the Rav of many, many Haredim in Mea Sharim. The yeshiva lives on today in the legacy that he started, that he created, and still brings in boys and brings people from all over the world to come learn in a yeshiva setting, in an environment where people are flocking towards You know, I myself have many friends, many family members that have gone to the Meir Yeshiva in order to grow themselves, and they benefit from many of what Rav Nassim Tzvi created, much of what Rav Nassim Tzvi created in the Yeshiva, in terms of the policies, in terms of the open door policies, and in terms of the support that is given to anyone and everyone that walks in the door. So an unbelievable yeshiva, an unbelievable institution, all basically credited, or much of it credited, to Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, who had been there since he was 23 years old in a formal way, but all the way back to when he was there when there were only 200 students. He stayed with the yeshiva, he developed himself in the yeshiva, and ultimately became the head of the yeshiva until his passing in 2011. That's Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel in a nutshell. Who is Rosh Yeshiva? One of his, what? One of the Finkels. I think I don't remember his first name. I think he had two sons that were vying for it. I remember, and then one of them got the job. The other one stayed on as like the Rosh Yeshiva and the fundraiser, or stayed on as like a Rebbe and the fundraiser. I had a share from one of them. And I still have the notes from this year. I every so often, looking through my notes, I find it's like this little paper that I was scribbling little notes on. He was talking about Kiddushin. I don't remember why. Anyways, but Rav Nassim Tzvi gave over, you can find this on YouTube also, in one of his Friday morning talks, he gave over the following idea about Lech Lecha. We know that Avram Avinu, based on the end of last week's Parsha, was thrown into the fiery furnace. And this was one of the 10 tests that he had, 10 tests that Avram was tested with. Right? Hashem nisas Avraham. Hashem tested him. He held him up as the mantle of commitment, right? Avram Avinu. But there's a bit of a discussion amongst the Rishonim and the Mefarshim. What was the first test? Some people say that the first test was the fiery furnace. But Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel points out that the Rambam didn't think that the Rambam thought that the first of the tests was this week's Parsha, Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha was the beginning of the tests. To leave your home, to leave everything you've known, to put behind you the Avodah Zarah of your parents and your grandparents and everybody before you, to go out and basically follow the Word of God. So Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel said that his great-grandfather, the original Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, said in his Nesivas HaMusar, I think that was safer. He says that why is it that the Rambam feels the need to focus on Lech Lecha first? So he explains, and this is what he says in this YouTube clip, although it's a little hard to hear him, so you have to have a little patience. It's only 7 minutes long. But he says that despite the difficulty that goes into a physical challenge, like going into a fiery furnace, it's not as difficult as going into a spiritual challenge. Spiritual challenges are themselves the most difficult to overcome, the most difficult to grow within. And for Avram Avinu at that time, going through a fiery furnace is obviously painful and is obviously something that he would choose not to do. But it was not as difficult as leaving his father and all of his parents and all of his family's traditions behind to go out and seek out Hashem. He says we have to understand that as much as we look at physical pain as something to overcome and procedures to have to fix them, we also have to look at the same way our spiritual difficulties, our spiritual challenges. We have to work just as hard to overcome those. And that's why the Rambam starts with the words of Lech Lecha, with the test of Lech Lecha, for Avram to leave his home and to leave all religious and spiritual ideas that he had known for 40 years. He left it to go travel and to commit himself to Hashem. And it's very befitting Devar Torah. I don't think he was necessarily meaning the following idea, but this is obviously the connection, that despite Rav Nassim Tzvi's difficulties himself in his health and his condition, he nonetheless chose to instead continue fighting the spiritual battle at the cost of his physical battle. Right? He said, I'm not going to deal with my Parkinson's. I'm rather going to deal with my spiritual difficulties and continue learning. And that's the life that he led. And that's the legacy that he gave over not only to those who knew him, but to the entire yeshiva. The entire yeshiva saw the expression of what it means to learn Torah, the commitment and the sacrifice you have to make to learn Torah from his condition.
What about the doctors? Wouldn't they say, well, you should be taking your medicine type of thing?
Well, it depends on what the medicine does. In this case, the medicine wasn't going to heal him. It was just going to take away the symptoms.
Oh.
So for him, the symptoms were a side effect that he was willing to deal with if it meant the ability to learn Torah. And if taking care of the side effects meant he wasn't able to learn as well, so then he was not willing to take it. And that message, that lesson, that inspiration filtered through the entire yeshiva. Imagine when your Rosh Yeshiva comes in to give shiur, and he's shaking and fighting to say every word that message gives over the yeshiva. You know, the student's going to think twice before he says, "Oh, I don't want to go to Seder. I'd rather eat a longer breakfast." Right? And you see Rav Nassim Tzvi fighting to walk on stage. You see him fighting to get every word out of his mouth. So how could you go eat breakfast? When your Rosh Yeshiva is battling through Parkinson's just to learn Torah, and you're sitting here wanting to eat more breakfast. Right? That kind of mentality, that kind of commitment, that kind of sacrifice filters through to the entire yeshiva. And that's perhaps why the Mir has become such a successful destination for so many serious Lom de Torah, so many serious students, because of that legacy and because of that passion and commitment, perhaps in line in the legacy of Avraham Avinu himself, who passed the physical test, but most importantly, according to the Rambam, who was passing and trying to deal with the challenge of his spiritual test as well.
Would emotional problems be more like a spiritual test? Or?
Presumably. Closer to it, I would think. But I don't know if it necessarily fits in either box, either category. It's its own thing, too. That is the legacy of Nassim Tzvi Finkel, his 10th Yahrzeit coming up this coming Monday. Mirtz Hashem, his neshama shav and aliyah. We should all be inspired by the unbelievable commitment he made, and the yeshiva continues today. That's him in his older age. This is when he could still stand up, probably in the early 2000s, if I had to guess.
He looks really good in the
Yeah, it's a bit of a trend,
a bit of a change.
A bit of a change from his youth. I don't know if he was able to grow a beard when he was in high school. Either way, that's Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, an unbelievable person and an unbelievable inspiration. Everyone should have a wonderful night. Thanks for joining me. Next week, Mishlei and Manasseh College.